Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, March 5th. I'm Ray Graff, and I want to thank the folks at The Moth for another disturbing lead-in program. Not sure how you follow a program about being pen pals with a guy who decapitated his parents, but we'll try. How about fried chicken? It's as good as anything. Hey, Jasper Alexander will be with us, and he makes some of the greatest fried chicken you have ever had. If you have a question about grilling or frying or Southern comfort food, Jasper Alexander's your man. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. There'll be no decapitations on the program. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Chef Jasper Alexander and your cooking calls coming up. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. It's about 2:07, and we're figuring things out. Okay, let's do a magic trick. Ready? We're going to turn Chef Jasper Alexander, who makes great fried chicken and Southern comfort food, we're going to turn him into a food and agricultural journalist who educates and cooks. Ready? Presto! Jasper Alexander is now Deanna Fox, food and agriculture journalist. The number to call if you'd like to talk to Deanna Fox yet again, 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. Of course, you've read her stuff in the Times Union, the New York Times, Washington Post, and she was on only, well, God, it only seems like last week, but welcome back, Deanna Fox.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
What the heck is going on here?
You know, I'm just always around. I just linger. I'm like a bad odor on everything. Just sticks.
Well, the truth of the matter is there was a little something happened with the phones or something or other, and Jasper Alexander is not here at this time. He may pop in which case we'll just keep chatting away. It'll be a lot of fun. In the meantime, I got to tell you, the soup show that we did last week was great fun. And remember we talked about the dill pickle soup?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you make some?
I was, moderately appalled by the idea. Joe Makowitz, who screens the calls on Medical Monday, came in and he had, I was praying it wasn't a urine sample, but it was a container of dill pickle soup. And we brought it home and we tried it and it was really good.
Well, there you go. So now you're a convert.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, but I would say it was pretty good. You've never made that.
I've had it, but I've never made it.
Let me ask you a question. Since Jasper was going to be on, do you ever make fried chicken at home?
It's not something I do a lot. However, I have been playing around with an air fryer more lately.
Oh, yeah.
And I did make like air fried drumsticks.
Really?
That were pretty good. Yeah. I didn't go in for like the whole leg or like the breast. I went for a smaller cut. I went for the drumstick. And it worked out really good. I was really impressed with how crispy but still moist everything turned out.
Amazing. Now, these air fryers, it's kind of a new fad. And, we've talked about maybe getting one of these things. Does it really taste like true fried chicken? You had Jasper's fried chicken.
I have. And he makes amazing fried chicken. And the whole story behind what he's doing is pretty great, too. But, you know, it doesn't have that oily taste. Like, there is fat, you know, so you're cooking the chicken in oil, which is a fat. And fat is a carrier for flavor. So you are getting a lot of flavor when you're deep frying something in fat.
Yeah.
So it's not the same flavor. It's not really the same texture, but it's not a bad flavor or a bad texture when you do it in an air fryer. It's less mess. It's, you know, you don't have this like oil smell that penetrates everything in your house when you make it at home. But I was really impressed with it. You can still do the process similarly. You can marinate your chicken if you're going to do that. Some people do it. I've known people who marinate chicken in pickled brine, speaking of pickle soup. And that's actually, it's actually pretty good because it's not really any different than a regular wet brine. But it just has like a dill flavor. But for mine, I didn't marinate it. I didn't do like a buttermilk soak or anything. I almost made like an at-home shake and bake.
Ah.
Remember shake and bake?
Oh, I sure do.
I used to love that stuff. My grandmother used to make shake and bake pork chops like every week.
Yeah, every now and then we'll still do that. I love the shake and bake. You know.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, so I basically that's what I did, but I really kicked up the seasoning on it, and I did like a hickory. It was like a hickory smoke seasoning blend.
Yeah.
And I added that in with the flour and the breadcrumbs and everything else.
Yummy.
And I fried it. I think that I'm trying to remember. I think I did it at like 360 on the air fryer for 12 minutes, and then I turned them, and I did it at 360 for another 12 minutes, and then I cranked it up to 390 degrees Fahrenheit, and did it for like another 12 minutes, and it was so, like, it just like shattered in your mouth. It was so crispy on the outside, but so tender on the inside still somehow. It was really good.
Well, you know, Deanna Fox, who is joining us here on Food Friday, I got to tell you now, this is kind of like one of those game shows where there's a person behind the curtain listening to what you said. While you were describing that, Jasper Alexander got on the line, and he heard you describe what you did. He is happy to join the show. Jasper, did you hear what Deanna Fox was describing?
I heard it all, and she was right on the money, 100%.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I agree with everything she just said.
Well, now that being said, what the hell happened to you?
I ran into a little bit of trouble with some cell coverage, but I am in a stable and secure area at this point.
All right, good. You know, like Dick Cheney used to be in a secure location.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, you guys know Jasper Alexander from Hattie's Restaurant. Deanna Fox, you know Jasper Alexander as well, right?
Yes, I've had the pleasure of interviewing him before, so.
All right.
Nice to hear from you, Jasper. Yeah.
And to you, I hope you're well.
Yes, everyone's good here. Thank you.
Well, I hope that you can stick around, Deanna, since you graciously jumped in on no notice at all. You guys can both answer questions about food. And let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. Spencer in New Paltz. Spencer, you're on.
Well, okay, so I love fried foods after living in the South for quite a while, but whatever I do with them and whatever oil I use, my batter or breading separates from the food after it's cooked and sits for a minute. How do I stop that from happening?
How do
I get my batter or...
We'll go to Jasper first.
Sure. Well, are you using some sort of a like a wet medium, like a buttermilk or water or something like that, to attach a dry coating and then putting it in the fryer? Is that what you're...
Yes. Yeah. I worked at a place that did all their fresh fried food in Nashville for a while. And that's what they did with the buttermilk and egg and then flour and then back the buttermilk and egg back in the flour and then straight into the fryer. But when I do that at home, I don't know why, but the breading always separates or the batter separates from my fried foods, whether it's chicken, fish, whatever.
Your breading process is definitely sufficient. It's probably a temperature thing. It's probably a low temperature issue is what I'm guessing. I would get either a candy thermometer or a thermometer that goes up into the, you know, 300, 350, 400 range and make sure that the oil's at the right temperature, which should be in the, you know, 325 to 350 range.
Right. Yeah, I have a thermometer. I just shy away from using it. I guess I'm going to have to start using it.
It's a good plan.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, Spencer. We appreciate the call. You know, I don't know if you heard when we were trying to track you down, Jasper, but Deanna was talking about this air fryer, and I have seen them in the stores. And I just wondered, have you ever tried one?
I have not. I have not. So I was listening to what Deanna was saying about them, and you know, everything that she said made perfect sense from just a cooking process and, you know, how the circulating air works as opposed to the oil and the oil transferring flavor. But I've heard people have good results with them.
But you wouldn't do that. I mean, Deanna, you have fried. I know you don't like it to do it on a regular basis, but you fry chicken in oil, right?
Yeah. I mean, I love to fry other things in oil, like donuts, and French fries and all sorts of delicious things. But I don't, you know, I'm not well versed in the world of fried chicken.
Boy, are you
lucky.
There's
so many good, so many amazing people in the area who make it, like Jasper, that it's never far away from me. I just, you know, hop online and order some up.
How often do you have to change the oil, Jasper? I mean, do you just reuse it over and over again
at home?
Yeah.
At a certain point, it'll start to go off or go rancid a little bit. So it would depend if you kept it in the refrigerator, it would keep it a little bit longer. If you filtered it carefully through either a fine mesh strainer or a coffee filter, it would be even better and get all the particulates out of it. It'll last for a while, but no, it's not a forever. And it's somewhat cumbersome to have around. It takes a decent amount of oil. I mean, there's lots of different ways you can do it at home, from having a tabletop fryer to a cast iron skillet or just a heavy bottom pot, so there's lots of ways to do it, but bare minimum you're talking about having probably a gallon or better of oil around. It's something you got to consider.
Now, was I talking to you years ago, or was it another restaurant in Saratoga where the person said, oh, yeah, when we're done with the oil, this guy comes around and takes it and puts it in his vehicle? Is that still happening?
No. I mean, it does, but not anywhere near. You know, there's a little while there, like in the early 2000s, where a lot of people were converting, cars over to run on grease, and it certainly can be done. I haven't had anybody come up and ask me for my oil in quite a while.
Well,
but they're still out there.
I am increasingly senile, and so therefore, I probably imagined that whole conversation. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah, it was a thing for a while.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Deanna Fox is here, and Jasper Alexander. It's a doubleheader of food fun here, and we'll be back. That's nice. That's my buddy Chuck DeLoya on the guitar. Okay, if you're just joining us, at about 1:50, the Moth put a very disturbing tale on that scared the daylights out of me, and then it was a perfect lead into this program. Then I introduced the show about Jasper Alexander being on and how great the fried chicken was, and then we went to the news and couldn't get Jasper. So Deanna Fox, who was on last week, came on, and we started talking, and then Jasper Alexander from Hattie's Restaurant came on. So now we have Deanna Fox and Jasper Alexander, and then you can join in by calling 800-348-2551. You got a question about Southern comfort food? Jasper Alexander's here. Deanna Fox is here, is a food and agriculture journalist and educator who can talk about all kinds of things from soup to nuts. Let's go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Last week's program about putting too much salt in soup and having to extract the soup, the salt from the soup.
Yeah.
Well, Julia Childs uses potatoes. She would add potatoes, she had a situation where she was making a dish and the top of the shaker came off into the soup with all the salt in it,
Oh, boy.
And the potatoes were like a sponge and took it out. And since this is a Southern show, you could also use grits. And
absolutely.
If you have like chicken soup, you could make Jewish grits. It's really good.
No, I like it.
Huh. Absolutely. Yeah, anywhere you can get your grits in.
Yeah, and Julia Child is just like such a treasure because she just thinks of things, she used to think of things like that. And the potato probably works too because the potato adds just mass into the soup, but it breaks down and it gets really starchy and would kind of thin out, dissolve a lot of the other flavors happening. So that is a really good tip. I like it.
It's Food Friday today. Jasper Alexander and Deanna Fox join us today. 800-348-2551 is the number. By the way, Jasper, now the last time you were on, I think was, maybe August, September, something like that. And we were in full lockdown mode. And maybe there's that light at the end of the tunnel now. How have you fared at Hattie's over this very difficult year?
So it's been an interesting year to say the least. We had a fairly decent spring and summer, all things considered. You know, as got a lot of attention, they made some parklets in the street, and we benefited from having a large patio area that we could see people on, so we were able to space people out. But we then made the very hard decision to close down for January, February, and March, just because, you know, at the time the rates were still climbing, and they didn't, you know, clear path ahead, and it made sense for the safety of everybody, the staff, rather than to be, you know, run the risk of being open and closed, rather just close and have everybody sort of locked down. So we're going to reopen on April 1st. At the same time, the Chicken Shack, the fast casual version of Patty's in Wilton, has been able to survive this very well. The transition to, you know, a full takeout process is not a far step for that concept.
Right.
And it's stayed busy and has been able to keep the staff healthy, and it's been we've had a good run there, thank goodness.
The Chicken Shack is a great place, and it's not very close to my house, but it's worth, like, I'll go up to get the spicy chicken or just both. I'll get
sure.
you know and
sure.
The hush puppies and everything, and you know, by the, I have to wrap it in blankets and everything else to keep it warm for the 45 minutes.
Yeah, It's a good car freshener for sure. Your car's going to smell like fried chicken for a while.
Definitely worth it, though. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's doubleheader today. Jasper Alexander and Deanna Fox on this bonus edition of Food Friday. Jane is in Plattsburgh. Hello, Jane.
Hello.
You're on.
I just had a comment about the used cooking oil.
Oh, yeah.
Around here, so my husband was one of those crazy people who was driving around picking up used fryer oil back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Now the big places get their oil picked up, and it's a commodity. So there's a commodities company that picks up all the used fryer oil, and then they use it for farm equipment, for the diesel tractors and diesel trucks. I just thought
amazing.
I'd share. I'd love to talk about chanterelles and other things, but I don't have any food questions at the moment.
Oh, well.
I always talk about chanterelles.
What do you got, Jing?
Well, I do try to preserve my chanterelles to enjoy the flavor later on. So what I end up doing, and then it's always a thing that I find in the freezer a few months later, and then I don't know what to do with it. So here's what I do. I take sautéed butter and garlic, and I just lightly cook them. What else could I do in particular to get my children to eat chanterelles?
Sedate them. All right, Jasper first, and then Deanna.
So as far as the freezing and the preserving, what you're doing will work very well, and it's just important to, when you're freezing, to give some space in between them so that they freeze individually and not in one big block. That'll make the refreshing of them easier and keep the integrity of the mushroom a little better. And you can also just freeze them just straight. You know, I had a mushroom guy in Seattle that would make the rounds and to all the restaurants, and he would pick, you know, Seattle and the Northwest is just inundated with all kinds of wild mushrooms. And so he would bring them, and he would, you know, in the lean part of the season, he would have some that he would bring in frozen that he just froze just straight, and they were fantastic.
Good to know.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right. Well,
thanks a lot
for the call. Deanna, you have any ideas?
I mean, a chanterelle is such a beautiful mushroom. It'd be a pity to just hide it in something. But I know a trick that I used to use on my children was to hide it in other things. And I think a really good place to hide a mushroom is in like a dumpling or like an egg roll.
Yeah.
So something like that where you can kind of sneak them in is a good way to use them up. And, you know, you're usually using other heavy flavors like soy sauce and sesame oil in those products. So it's a good way to kind of mask it if you're just looking to use them up. But I think it would be a shame to take a beautiful chanterelle, especially a local chanterelle, and hide it in something.
Throw it in a Salisbury steak or something. Yeah,
yeah.
You make a point. Go ahead,
Jeff. They're probably my favorite mushroom. I was just saying, chanterelles are probably my favorite mushroom.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah,
we have not done one in quite a while. you know, not scavenging. What do they call that? Where you
forage. You got to forage for mushrooms.
Scavenging, foraging. Yeah. So we've done several of those, and every time I think about mushrooms, I think about the inherent danger of foraging, and you really got to know what you're doing. And I don't know why that just came to me, and now it's another reason to be terrified. Max in Pittsfield. Max, you're on.
Hey, this is Max. Yeah, so I just had some questions about brining chicken. I love fried chicken, but I'm a bit of a novice in terms of, like, actually making it. I've been trying to get into it. And, you know, I've seen all these recipes with orange peel, bay leaf, sugar, salt, this and that. So I was just wondering if you had any tips on, you know, how to make a good brine and get that juicy flavor.
Mm.
Sure. You know, brining is a great way to enhance the flavor of lots of things, but chicken certainly takes well to it. And it's really sort of whatever sort of flavor profile you want to add to it. It could be something, you know, just a little bit of garlic and like you said, some citrus, maybe some lemon or orange and rosemary, or, you know, around Thanksgiving, I brine the turkey in apple cider and some cloves and bay leaves and thyme. And, you know, so you can, you know, sort of gently nudge the flavor of the chicken one way or the other. And it also does a great job at helping it stay juicy, regardless of how you cook it, whether or not you roast it or fry it or, you know, do whatever. So it's a great method to, you know, add flavor to the chicken as well as make it moist.
Deanna.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, I don't do wet brines on my poultry that often. I usually do a dry brine. But one brine that I really like doing that's a wet brine is buttermilk. I think buttermilk with some flavoring agents added in. So like a bay leaf, even just like some Bell's poultry seasoning added is really nice, I think. And buttermilk is so great because buttermilk is actually very acidic. So if you're ever in need of buttermilk and you don't have any, you just take a cup basically of regular milk and add a tablespoon of white distilled vinegar to it, and you get the same level of acidity. So I'm not the chicken brining expert, but I do love a good buttermilk brine when it comes to poultry.
Max, thanks a lot for the call. It's a Food Friday doubleheader today. We have Jasper Alexander, our regularly scheduled guest, and then Deanna Fox, who stepped in at the last moment, even though she was on last week. It's great to have them both here. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a food question for either of these two. This email from Allison in lovely Carmel, New York. She says, I recently acquired, thanks to Marbled Meats in Cold Spring, a quart of really high-quality rendered duck fat. I've used it for delicious Ukrainian plov. Can I use it to fry?
Can she use it to fry?
That's the question.
That was a question?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more luscious than stuff fried in duck fat. I mean, that's the top tier right there.
Any separate temperature issues as opposed to whatever you use for a medium?
No, the temperature is the same. Duck fat's very, very thick, and so it heats up a little bit slower. But it's other than that, no. In the end, it's gonna be used just the same way you'd use any sort of other oil.
You ever use duck fat, Deanna?
I have fried in duck fat before, but I usually don't have a ton of duck fat when I do have it. So if I make something like fried potatoes, I'll fry them in peanut or canola oil. Mm. And then I melt down some of that duck fat, and I just kind of use it to finish the potato. So meaning that I take them out of whatever oil I fried them in, and I'll put them in a big bowl, and I'll just kind of spoon some of that oil over top. And it soaks up a little bit, but like Jasper said, it is really thick. So almost as it cools, kind of coats the potato and gives this really beautiful flavor. And then also, you know, grabs onto all of the salt or the pepper or whatever, you know, flavoring you might put on it. But duck fat, if you have duck fat, I feel like you're a millionaire. Like, that's such a luxury. It's so great.
Yeah.
What, is it tough to come by? I mean,
no, I mean, duck breast is really fatty. It's got this huge cap of fat on it, but I just don't feel like people really cook duck that often.
No, I mean, in a restaurant scenario, if you have duck, like Deanna said, you almost to be served properly, you have to render all that fat down to get that duck skin really, really crispy. So you usually cross hatch and you cut little slits into the skin so that it renders out the duck fat. And if you were cooking even two, you know, good sized duck breasts in a, say, an 8-inch pan, you'd probably end up with, you know, a cup or better of duck fat off those two duck breasts. I mean, it's really, the skin is really thick. But you can buy it in little 8-ounce tins at, you know, I don't know about it at, you know, a big commercial grocery store, but certainly any specialty shop would have it, and certainly available online.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's Food Friday with Jasper Alexander and Deanna Fox, and Marcia is in Altamont. Marcia.
Hey, hi. Yeah, I'm a buttermilk briner, too. But my question is, I've been long in search of a proper recipe to make something called red-eye gravy that they serve in the South with sausage biscuits.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sure. A good one. Jasper, I bet you have an awesome recipe for that.
Well, I mean, it's a recipe, you know, I could definitely send a recipe, but basically it's you know, the drippings of off of a ham mixed with a little bit of flour and some coffee. And instead of using, you know, water or stock, you use the coffee. And it's really that ham, the drippings from the ham and the thawing that's created when you roast that ham, you know, all the little bits of good stuff that sticks to the bottom of the pan. That's what makes that delicious red eye gravy. But it's generally a much thinner than a typical, say, turkey gravy would be. But it's just delicious and salty and just, you know, it's a fantastic thing.
Oh, that sounds great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Deanna, you want to weigh in?
No, that's exactly right. It just makes me hungry thinking about it. I love red eye gravy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Marcia, thank
you. It's delicious.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
You know, you got me thinking now. We make ham every now and again. I'll take some drippings and put it in my coffee some morning before work. I mean,
so you know what bullet coffee is, right, Ray? It's where you put a little butter in with your coffee.
Wait, hold it. Wait a minute. No,
you're on to something.
No, I do not know this. Explain, please.
I think it's like a paleo keto trend. I'm not really sure how it took off, but it's supposed to be like supposed to give you energy throughout the day. So instead of adding like cream or sugar to your coffee, you add in a pat of butter and stir it into your coffee and drink that. And I don't love it, but maybe I would love it more if it was actually like ham drippings.
Oh my God. You know what?
If it was bacon grease.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. If it was duck fat or ham drippings, I might be more inclined, but I've tried it too.
I'm doing that.
Interesting, but
I got to tell you, I am doing
gotta
that.
It's got to be like Irish. You know, it's got to be really pure Irish or European style butter, and you've got to make sure the coffee is good and strong. You know, there's rules. There's a whole sort of bullet coffee society out there.
Look, I'll be honest with you both. I mean, when the moth did the story about the decapitation, I thought we were off to a terrible start. And then Jasper didn't show up, and then I thought we were off to a trouble. Then Deanna showed up, things got better, then Jasper showed up. Now, butter and coffee, this is like the best day ever. Karen in Rensselaer County. Karen, you're on.
Hi there. I have three tricks to getting kids to eat food, including soups, which I thought of last week. When my daughter would cut straws in half and give the kids straws to suck their soup. And preschoolers I've seen eat pea soup because they loved it, drawing it up through a straw. Uh-huh. So that works great for the man who called in who didn't know how to get his kid to eat soup.
That's right. I was actually thinking about that today, about like a thicker soup. You said like a pea soup through a straw might be a good idea. I would worry about it being hot, but if you let it cool down for a kid a little bit, I'm sure that's really fun.
Exactly. What trick I did with my own daughters was I would, to get them to eat a new food, I would give them very few choices that night. We might have only like the main entree, a starch and a vegetable, and then be about an hour late serving the food. Then they had no choices and they were hungry and they ate it.
Yeah. So I feel like go ahead.
Another item, one that worked with older kids when they're starting to figure out the value of money, just pay them.
Yeah. That's the way I do it. I'll give you a dollar if you have your vegetables. That's exactly it, Karen.
Exactly. And it works great. for especially those eight-year-olds to 12-year-olds.
Genius.
Well, I feel like that makes me feel a lot better because I keep hearing all these great parenting tips about food, and I feel like I just probably threatened my children to eat their food. I don't feel like I did anything very ginger or motherly except for, like, wag my finger and maybe yell. So I feel better that you paid your kids' money. That makes me feel better.
Karen, thank you very much. Hey, do either of you, Jasper or Deanna, remember a time when your parents said, you will not leave this table until you eat every bite?
Yes. I just had this conversation with my mother because it was, for me, it was beets. She canned so many beets, and I feel like we ate beets all the time, and she would not let me leave the table until I ate the beets. So, yeah.
Did she stick to that? That's the question.
Yes, she would. If I wouldn't eat it that night, she would put it back in front of me for breakfast, and it just kept showing up until I ate it. So, I guess that probably explains a lot of, you know, my masochism as an adult. I don't know.
What about you, Jasper?
Oh, that's great. I was fairly adventuresome. I was a fairly adventuresome eater as a kid, so there wasn't a whole lot of things. But oddly enough, one of the things I love the most now, which is, you know, a lot of chefs and people who cook a lot love just a really nicely roasted chicken, right? It's very simple. It's very comforting. They can be very, very good. But as a kid, I just had a block on roasted chicken. So that was one that I would sort of like, you know, when she said, what do we have for dinner? Oh, we're having a roasted chicken. I'd just be like, I'd be deflated. I'd just like, oh my God, roasted chicken. But now I love them. So.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, I've tried this method with my children where I said, all right, no one's leaving the table until you eat everything, when you eat all your they will wait me out. I swear. Eventually, I just either fall asleep or say, all right, look, you win. That's it. Hey, we'll take a quick break here. Deanna Fox and Jasper Alexander join us today. We'll get back to more of your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. It's a Food Friday, or Friday, as we sometimes say around the newsroom. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff with you. We're joined today by Jasper Alexander and Deanna Fox. And we started out talking about Southern fried chicken and good stuff like that. And Deanna Fox is really an omnibus of information, an encyclopedia. So really, any kind of food you want to talk about, these two have it covered. Let's go to Phil in Pittsfield. Phil.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I'm looking for a suggestion for a good way to reheat fried chicken or any fried meat.
I love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, with fried chicken, I think the best way is if you don't have a fryer, you can refry it if you have the fryer. But if you don't have the fryer, then the best way is just in an oven. You know, at about 350, probably for about 20, 25 minutes. You don't want to heat it up any longer than necessary, but it definitely isn't going to be the same reheated as it is right out of the fryer. And many times when, people are asking me how, you know, what should I do with this chicken? I often tell them it'll be better and crispier if you just have it at room temperature or even cold than if you try to reheat it. Because it's often hard to get it hot enough to have the, you know, all the oil sort of get cooked back out of the skin. You know, an air fryer, if you had one of those, as we talked about a little bit earlier, I don't have a whole lot of experience with the air fryers, but that might work well. Maybe Deanna can speak to that or anything she's tried on her end.
Yeah, an air fryer could work well. And you probably don't need too much time because they cook pretty quick. So maybe even like 10 minutes around the 350 mark. But when I reheat things in the oven, regardless of what it is, if it's something that's not like a wet product, like soups or stews or anything like that, so any kind of baked good or something, even like fried chicken, I think would work. My trick is I take a brown paper bag and I put it in the brown paper bag and then just kind of loosely crumple up the open end and sprinkle some water on top or even throw a few ice cubes into the bottom of the oven, usually around 400 degrees. And it kind of creates like this like steam oven effect. it kind of brings everything back to life. I don't know what the alchemy of it is, but it is magic.
That's a great idea. I've never heard of that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Hey,
okay, so paper bag.
Go ahead, Phil.
Closed up.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And some water in the bottom of the oven?
Yeah, I either run my hand under the faucet and get some water in my hand and sprinkle that over the bag. You don't want the bag to be really wet. Or you can just take a couple of, like, two or three ice cubes and just throw them in the bottom of the oven. And that'll just generate a bunch of steam. And then really leave the oven door shut so the steam stays in. And I find that's a really great method for reheating things in the oven. It doesn't dry them out. And just something about the steam penetrates to get everything going. It's magic. I really don't know how it works, but it's magic.
Well, Phil, thank you very much for the call. It's Food Friday at 800-348-2551. Carol in Amherst. Oh, Carol, you're on.
Good afternoon. I'm remembering traveling around through rural North Carolina and visiting my aunt who made pimento cheese.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
equate that with Southern cooking.
Yeah. Boy, have you come to the right place.
Good. I just as an aside, I used to refresh stale bread by putting it in a paper bag and dampening the bag. And it worked quite nicely.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, now pimento cheese.
Yeah. Oh, well, I tell you what, Jasper knows a little about pimento cheese.
I'm a huge pimento cheese fan, big fan. Perhaps the biggest fan, and it's a great. It's sort of like, I mean, I've often referred to it as sort of like the Southern peanut butter. I mean, it just can go on anything from you know, celery to crackers to a spoon to, you know, whatever. And it's just a great spread. I love the flavor. I've been trying to bring, you know, pimento cheese up here in popularity for a long time, and it's sort of starting to gain a little bit of traction around. I see it on some other menus, which is great. And I just love it. And you can take it in lots of different directions. You know, you could add jalapeno to it if you wanted to. And it's really just, you know, cheese, a good quality cheese, and extra sharp cheddar works well. Grated onion and mayonnaise. And then you can a little salt, a little pepper. And then you can take it whatever direction. And obviously pimentos, which you can either buy pimentos in a jar or roast fresh red peppers and cut them up, or you know, any sort of roasted red pepper will work. But it's great stuff.
I think about the mayonnaise. I wouldn't have guessed that as a part of the ingredients.
Yeah, that's sometimes cream cheese, a mixture of mayonnaise and cream cheese. You'll see sometimes. I make mine typically just with mayonnaise.
And it's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah, it is.
And I'll stuff it in.
Oh, good.
You know, you can stuff it in. I'll make sometimes these little pimento cheese and andouille popovers, and I'll take a dough and I'll put a little, you know, couple of pieces of andouille sausage and a little scoop of pimento cheese in there, and then fold it over and fry it, and they're just delicious.
Oh, God. Carol, thank you for the call, and thank you for bringing that up. Hey, Deanna Fox, you ever drop any pimento cheese in some coffee?
No, but I have a question for Jasper about the mayonnaise. So I want to know if he uses Hellman's or if he has to order Duke's special.
Yeah, right. So at home, we are a strictly Duke's household. I'll let that be known. I mean,
interesting.
We're a strictly Duke's household. But for the pimento cheese, it's probably all made in one big giant plant, but I think just sort of at the restaurant, you can't buy Duke's, you know, if I were to buy Duke's at the restaurant, it would be just a case of the, you know, whatever they are, quart jars that you'd get at the grocery store. But I think that, you know, just your baseline level heavy duty restaurant mayonnaise is a great mayonnaise as well. That's what I use at the restaurant. And it's a little bit thicker than Hellman's. It doesn't have that sweetness that Duke's does, which is so nice for everything. But, you know, Duke's does, you know, if you're going to make it at home, I would recommend Duke's.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. You know, got several emails here. Some I can read, some I can't. And I'll thank you, Norman, for that one that I can't read on the air. This one is from Alice. Alice says, I was making chili once and made it too salty. I added a couple of whole peeled potatoes and simmered it a while longer. fishing out the cooked taters before serving. Chili was saved, and I now add a few whole potatoes to my chili whenever I make it because they're so good by themselves. What do you think, panel?
I think so it's like a chili braised potato.
Yes.
That's what it sounds like she's making. Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
This one's from Eric and says, you know, air fry is a complete misnomer. It's just hot air convection cooking.
So that's right.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
All right. This one is from Jan. Jan says, what are your thoughts on using baking powder on chicken, fries, pickles, et cetera, to make them crispy? What's the best technique to apply so it doesn't cake up? And that is from Jan. We'll go to Jasper first and then Deanna.
Sure. I mean, baking powder is a little bitter, so I can't imagine using too much of it. Cornstarch would work as well, and is a little bit more neutral in terms of something that's a little bit finer than flour. But you know, the key to the breading sticking is having some sort of medium that the coating will help. You got to have a medium that'll help the coating stick to the product. So a lot of times that can be buttermilk, or it can be egg, or it can be just water. And then it really just depends on what the product is. For something slippery like a pickle, you might need to do, you know, a flour and then an egg and then a flour again to get the coating to stick. That's what I would recommend.
All right. What about you, Deanna?
Well, I think just based on what Jasper just said, I kind of want to open a bar that's called the Slippery Pickle. I think that would be great.
That would be a great bar.
That's fine.
I hope that I'm wondering what the origin of the question actually is. If she thinks that she's just putting baking powder on something as a substitute for flour or cornstarch.
I don't know. I mean, I read you what it is. It's very simple. What are your thoughts on using baking powder on chicken, fries, pickles, et cetera, to make them crispy? How do you make that not cake up? That was about it.
I would maybe baking powder a little bit. I've seen it in some recipes for fried product to give actually like some body, to actually create like a little bit of fluffier texture to a coating.
Absolutely.
But if you're looking for crispy, I would actually probably go for baking soda.
Okay.
So baking soda actually has, when you use baking soda, you kind of alter, it's something called the Maillard effect. And essentially what happens is it helps protein synthesize into carbon, which makes things really crispy and delicious. So maybe not baking powder, but maybe just a little bit of baking soda.
Interesting.
Would work.
Okay. This one's from Mark in Lenox. Mark says, speaking of foraging, I just ran across a tub of harvested ramp butter in my freezer. I made it last April. Do you think it's still okay? And that's from Mark.
Been in the freezer since last April?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I would think it would be fine.
Deanna?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would be fine if it was airtight and didn't absorb up any flavors from the freezer.
Absolutely.
It's probably good. Yeah.
Okay, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Bob in Poughkeepsie. Bob, you're on.
Yes, happy Friday from sunny Poughkeepsie.
And also with you.
Thank you. Short and sweet question. What's the best way to reheat pizza?
Oh, boy. Well, there's the cast iron skillet theory.
What?
Where you put a cast iron skillet on the stove, turn it on to medium low heat, put the pizza in and cover it, and it crisps up the bottom while letting the cheese, the residual steam kind of melt the cheese in a kind of convection setting. The oven is fine, I think, as long as you keep an eye on it. Don't let it get too dark. You can put foil over the top.
Bob, Deanna's first idea is great. Jasper, go ahead.
My only trick is that you know, when you, if for the oven, is just whatever pan you're going to put it on to reheat it, put it in the oven as the oven's heating up so it's nice and hot when you go in, and then just put the pizza on the hot pan so there's no downtime in cooking or crisping up that crust.
I really love the idea about putting it in a cast iron pan on the stove, though, because you can throw some butter in there and really make the bottom of that thing. What'd you say, Jasper?
Or duck fat.
Well,
oh my God.
Yeah, all right. Maybe that's a different show. We'll have to get Rocco involved next time. We'll have three people on the show. Marcia in Saratoga. Marcia, you're on.
Jasper, this is your Marcia. And I wanted to know what your recipe was when you beat Bobby Flay. And by the way, Jasper, Bobby Flay works for my daughter now, who is president of Food Network.
All right.
That's good to know. Marcia, I hope you're well.
I'm very, very well, and I'm really loving this show, so thank you. I miss you.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the recipe that I used on the show was just the same one we do at the restaurant. You know, it was a little bit of a different cooking scenario. We had these sort of makeshift fryers that were, you know, propane-driven and a very thin pan, and they were very hot and hard to regulate the temperature on. So I think it's fairly I think we were fairly lucky that either one of us got a good edible product, but we both managed to persevere that. And it was just the chicken that we do at the restaurant. It was the same process. You know, I had to go get more chicken. I had to send somebody back to get more chicken for the restaurant because of the whole sort of ruse of the show where I was, you know, trying to feed these, you know, a party full of people to track.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun. We had a great time doing it.
Didn't hurt your friendship with him? Because I know you're good.
No, not at all. He took it in stride. I mean, he's been a fan for a while, and he loves coming up.
I know.
And having the chicken.
I know.
Chicken. So it's
he bought a house in Saratoga.
Yeah, he lost gracefully.
Too, so.
He bought a house in Saratoga.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the next time he's on, we'll have Deanna, yeah. Jasper, and Bobby Flay on, and we'll
that's right.
You know, great. So your daughter is president of the Food Network. Is Bobby Flay a real pain to work with? I mean, let's be honest here.
Not for my daughter, because she writes on a paycheck, so no.
Seems like a nice fellow. Hey, Marcia, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Only a couple minutes left here with Deanna Fox and Jasper Alexander. So this whole business of Beat Bobby Flay, you said there was a little ruse involved. There's some showbiz there, Jasper?
Well, no, they just, I mean, the construct of the show was that you know, we know you to be very good at what you do, so we're going to come up and do this expose on you. The whole idea was that the days of shooting that we did about 3 days of shooting, and it would culminate in this big party at the track, sort of a Southern barbecue kind of, or Southern fried chicken, I should say, party at the track. And then when you're there sort of hamming it up for your crowd there, then they do the bait and the switch, and he comes out. They've got a whole, you know, trailer. They keep you misdirected, so you're looking and filming in another direction, and they've got a trailer there where Bobby and his whole crew are in the trailer, and they really come out at the last minute. It was a total surprise for me. I mean, it is a surprise when they come out. I didn't expect it.
Oh, come on.
TV crews,
that's a huge amount of people and crew and staff and lights and everything. They're, and you had no idea? Come on.
No idea. Well, there's all that stuff there already because you're already doing a show like that. So and, you know, and like I said, they bring you in and they have you sort of facing a different direction. And then the stuff, you know, the trailers where the other crew was were already there. And I'm sure, you know, everybody's been up to the track. There's trailers all over the place. So that's not an uncommon sight.
Right.
And truly it was a surprise. I did not know that it was going to be a cooking show. And it was, you know,
cool.
fortunately we ended up on top.
All right. Listen, we only have about a minute and a half here. Let's go to Todd in Holyoke. Todd, you're on.
Yeah. Hi. Just, referring back to the caller who asked about the fried chicken reheat.
Oh yeah.
I've been a chef for a lot of years, retired now. And I found that one of the best ways to heat up fried chicken or anything fried is to put it on a cookie sheet on a cooling rack inside the sheet. So it's not sitting down in the pan in the oil that's going to be generated from reheating. And I put it in the oven about 250 degrees just for about 15 minutes or so. And it stays nice and crispy, doesn't get overheated, and it's quite delicious that way.
Deanna, what do you think about that?
Yeah, the thing, how that works with the rack is that it just generates air underneath the chicken as well. It kind of elevates the chicken, so all the hot air is getting around the chicken all at the same time. So it's a good tip.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. All right, now, Jasper Alexander, if people want to track down Hattie's on the internet, how do they do that?
We have hattiesrestaurant.com, which is for the the downtown store in Saratoga, and then Hattie's Chicken Shacks, plural, for the Chicken Shack in Wilton.
All right. And Deanna Fox, if people want to track your comings and goings?
My website is foxonfood.com, and then you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Deanna N. Fox.
Well, thank you both for being here. Now, here's the deal. Deanna Fox has been on 2 weeks in a row. So, Jasper, you have to also be on next week.
Over to next week?
Yeah, we're doing a show with the Irish people. So,
perfect.
Yeah, it'll be fried chicken and Irish food. What could go wrong? Yeah. Hey, thank you both for being here very much. We're out of time. Support comes from Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. Honest Weight Food Co-op in Albany. Local, organic, and sustainable groceries for all. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Home delivery available online at honestweight.com for information. And Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family serving Albany since 1982. Their regional Italian cuisine now available for online ordering. CafeCapriccio.com for information. Once again, thanks to Jasper Alexander. Thanks to Deanna Fox. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling and for emailing. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Wes Burton took the calls. Our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. That's it for the week. What a splendid week of Vox Pop. And when I say splendid, I mean, it's all right. We'll see you on Monday, theoretically, for a medical Monday at 2 p.m. Meantime, have a splendid, safe weekend. Wear the mask. The end is in sight.